right, a little longer intro than usual, but it is a minute after 5 p.m. time for American Hit Radio. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD as well. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. I'm for the next hour, if you're going to be kind enough to stay with us, my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well, running the board for me while I shuffle paper and do what I always do. Of course, on Wednesdays, if you're a regular listener, you already know this, and you're going to say, oh, please don't say it again. But if you, just in case there's somebody new that's tuning in, we decided a long time ago, about 10 years ago, to start a series on albums. I got the feeling then that albums were becoming obsolete. I didn't mean just the 12-inch vinyl version of albums, which, by the way, are having a bit of a renaissance right now. But I just meant albums in general, which is to say a group of songs that an artist puts together, gives it a title, and tries to sell as a package. All of these, the digitalization of music has made it very difficult for albums to have as much relevance because it's so easy to download individual tracks. And there are so many different services that are willing to basically make playlists for you based upon what they figure your taste is and everything else. And all of that ended up making albums further and further distant from being in the mainstream. And that really bothered me because I most of all, because I didn't like the idea of services telling me what my taste was. One of the most interesting things about music is tripping over something, discovering something new, and something that you might not have ever even dreamed that you would like. And I don't see how a service is going to be able to help you with that, because what they're generally going to do is put you in a box, say, oh, okay, you like rock and roll, or you like you like hip hop, and you like this style of those two things. So here's a bunch of stuff that we think fits into what the box is that we think you're in. And I want to think outside of the box, especially when there are so many different things that are happening in the world. And albums were a great way to do that, because you'd get the one or two tracks that you'd get on the radio, but then the rest of the thing would fatten out your perspective. So we decided that we were going to make a list of albums and start trying to talk about them in terms of greatness. And we had a list of 500 albums that we called the Alternative Top 40, 500 albums that never reached the top 40, my 500 favorite ones. And then after doing that for a while, we also realized that it wouldn't be that bad to add 500 top 40 albums. It would fatten out the whole list. That would give us an even 1,000, which means we're on about a 20-year trip to get this done, and we're about halfway done. In fact, on the top 40 side of it, we're on the other side of the hump. We'd crossed that about 2 months ago. And that's where we are today. We're going to cover an album which was a top 40 album, released in November of 1975. It's an album by Neil Young and Crazy Horse, and it's called Zuma. Made number 25 on the Billboard pop charts, thus being our top 500 of the top 40 list. It's the second Neil Young album to credit Crazy Horse as part of the artistry. This is his seventh studio album, if I remember correctly, and it's the third one, I believe, maybe the fourth that we've covered of Neil Young's. At least the fourth that we've covered out of, you know, in his catalog of albums. And Zoom is an interesting album. Not only because, well, Crazy Horse was never out of the picture, really. Crazy Horse was around on the Beach. Crazy Horse was around on Tonight's the Night. They didn't necessarily go by the name Crazy Horse then. And of course, with the death of a member, Danny Whitten, that changed things until Frank Sampedro came along and replaced him and became the new guitarist. And that's where we are now. It's the original Crazy Horse with Frank Sampedro now on guitar. So it's a four-piece band with Neil Young up front. And even that being the case, not every song on the album has Crazy Horse as the band. There's a couple of exceptions, at least. But the album Zuma is interesting, in my opinion, because it represents a lifestyle change for Neil Young. Coming out, especially after the darkness of what Neil called his ditch trilogy, saying that he kind of like wanted to ride in the ditch for a while because he didn't really like being in the middle of the road after putting out songs like Heart of Gold and such. So the three albums that he considered part of his ditch trilogy were Time Fades Away, On the Beach, and Tonight's the Night. And they represented a dark, drug-fueled phase and the death of a friend, Danny Whitten, Crazy Horse, and a bandmate also. But it also, this album also carries the weight of a failed marriage. Crazy Horse was back together with a new guitarist, and another failed attempt to record with Crosby, Stills, and Nash left Neil Young with a significant amount of material to draw from for this album. So all of these changes rejuvenated him and inspired Young to write in a wider variety of styles than he had in his past few albums. This album, Zuma, has sad love songs and sprawling, dreamlike historical anthems with, of course, you know, guitar frenzy on at least two of the tracks. And the diversity is really refreshing, and the net result is an album that's about as compelling as Tonight's the Night in terms of the way that it pulls you in emotionally, but it's also as easily enjoyable as After the Gold Rush for its melodicism and the lightness that comes through every now and then. I consider it to be a classic Neil Young album, and one that might be overlooked by even some of his most thorough and, you know, his beloved fans. So the first track up is a great opener. It's called Don't Cry No Tears. It's a song that goes back to when he was a high school kid. He had written it, most of it then, and he had decided to revisit it and moved it around a little bit. If you're a collector of the Neil Young box sets that have been coming out, those big, I don't know if you see them, they're like $300 if you buy the official big version of it, where he's having his entire archived series of his life's work. And if you have number one, you'd hear of the early version of this song as it existed really in the pre-Buffalo Springfield era. But he took it, picked it up, dusted it off a little bit, and turned it into a really cool contemporary pop song for 1975. A simple little pop hit. It's called Don't Cry No Tears. Thank you. course, Don't Cry No Tears. That's the Crazy Horse that still exists to this day, rather amazingly. 50 years. It would be longer than that if you count the Danny Whitten years as the original guitar player, but this is the first album with Pancho San Pedro on guitar. But with him and Ralph Molina and the bass player, Billy Talbot, that's it. That's the band. And good harmonies on that, too. That was another good thing about Crazy Horse is they're very, very simple in the way that they attacked their music. There is nothing fancy about it. They're straightforward players. The thing is, like, Neil loved that more than anything because it gave him so much room to breathe with the band. And with Pancho handing a lot of the rhythm parts, it gave Neil a lot of room to move with what he was trying to do with the band. And a good example of that is this next track, Danger Bird. This song is pretty much as slow as you can go with with a pop song. And it's a song that was inspired by pain. Neil, apparently, the story goes that Neil had found out that his first wife was having an affair. And basically he said, well, that's that. You know, it's like the end of a marriage. And he had started to write the song, but he started to do it in a way that I would say is mostly surreal rather than direct. There's very little about the lyrics that sound as though there's any anger in there, but there's an awful lot of energy. And you can hear that way more in the guitar than in Neil's voice and in the lyrics. This, you know, Crazy Horse is pretty famous for having long guitar jams and things like Cortez the Killer and Like a Hurricane are two obvious examples, one of which we will get to before the end of this show. But Danger Bird is up there on the list in that category. In fact, there was a list made once not too long ago of the best not obvious Neil Young songs. In other words, if you took away his hit singles, what are his best songs? And Danger Bird often makes the top 10. So enjoy the guitar work between Neil and Pancho on this one. And listen to how really the guitars tell you more about the mood of the song than the words do. It's called Danger Bird. Thank you. Wow. It's not easy to play that slow and have the song fill out and make its point. It's you might think that it's easy, but it takes a lot of patience, especially what Pancho's got to do on that record. Because Neil's pretty much playing lead throughout, and he's just being supportive. Neil Young had a couple of interesting comments about the song. I mean, when he first played it, he was talking to some critic, I suppose, and he says, "That's a wild song. It's so slow and great." He goes, "Isn't it slow?" He goes, "David Briggs," that's the producer, "always wanted to remix it. I like the mix. A combination of two songs, L.A. Girls and Ocean Boys, I never recorded," which, by the way, that's not, he did record it, but he never released it, because if you were buying the Neil Young Archives sets that I'm talking about, those expensive big boxes, that song did appear on volume 2 of his archive series. But anyway, he says it's a combination of that and what he rewrote it to be as a divorce song, I suppose, which is Danger Bird. And he goes, "Hey, sometimes that's what happens. One song doesn't come out. I'll be writing another and say, oh, that fits. Bang, drop it right in." Now, this is a shocking thing that I had read about this, about a famous artist's opinion of Danger Bird. None other than Lou Reed had been blown away by Danger Bird, considering it that it is, quote, the best guitar playing he had ever heard. His quote was, "It makes me cry. It is the best I have heard in my life. The guy is a spectacular guitarist. Those melodies are so marvelous, so calculated, constructed note to note. He must have killed to get those notes. It puts my hairs on end." So if you didn't quite get that much out of it, maybe you're just not paying close enough attention like Lou Reed did on Danger Bird. Now, the next track is pretty much a continuation of the same theme. It's definitely a divorce song, a breakup song. In this instance, it's not produced by David Briggs. It's produced by Tim Mulligan, who was working, I guess, at Broken Arrow Ranch instead of in the studio itself. And he's actually, I believe, on the track itself. It's an acoustic number, and it's a really, really sad love song. Neil Young, when he was playing this live at the Bottom Line before the album came out, before they played the song, he said, "This is a song that I learned recently. I wrote it too. This is a love song. It's one of the saddest love songs I've ever heard. And it's called Pardon My Heart."
It's a falling situation when all eyes are turned in. And the love isn't flowing the way it could have been. You brought it all on, oh, but it feels so a sad communication with little reason to believe. When one isn't giving and one pretends to receive,
song.
I care. But I love you more than moments we have or have not shared.
Hearing those two songs put together, Danger Bird and Pardon My Heart, they're like really like two sides of a coin, really. They're both covering the same topic, but while the first one is incredibly intense and brooding, really, with the way that those guitars are playing, the second one is just so mellow and reflective and like vulnerable. He's very vulnerable on that. You can feel that he's hurt and that he's wasn't expecting this situation to be, you know, the way that it was. He was caught by surprise, I think, when things didn't work out with his first marriage. But anyway, so much for that. I mean, from here, he pretty much moves on to a variety of topics. It's a best thing about the album, I think, is its variety. And the next song, again, is sort of like a perfect theme if you're moving along in a chronological sense, because it's back to a full-on Crazy Horse lineup. Pretty much every song but one is Crazy Horse, at least to some extent. I mean, the last track, Tim Drummond played the bass, but that's not much of a change. Billy Talbot was still there singing, as was Ralph Molina on drums. So they were there on that track, even if they weren't playing the instruments. But the next track is Crazy Horse. And like I said, it's a step. Now it's a step toward positivity. It's called I'm Looking for a Love.
In her eyes I will discover another reason why I want to live and make the best of what I see. Where the sun hits the water and the mountains meet the sand, there's a beach that I walk along sometimes. Start to say hello and never stop to think of any other time. Looking for a love that's right for me. I don't know how long it's gonna be, but I hope I treat her kind and don't mess with her mind. She starts to see the darker side of me. I've been looking for a lover, but I haven't met.
yet. She'll be nothing like I pictured her to be. In her eyes I will discover another reason why I want to live and make the best of what I see.
I don't know if I ever really heard them do that falsetto thing at the end of that track. By the way, you're listening to WHPC 90.3, WHPC, WHPC HD. The show is American Hit Radio. Heidi and I are here every Wednesday between 5 and 6 p.m. doing more or less what we're doing now, playing an album for you. And we return on Fridays for our How Music Changed series, and we're right smack dab in the middle of a pretty intense series on Jimi Hendrix, and I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot, and I'm also just having a lot of fun doing it. So I hope you can tune in on Fridays and pick up on some of that, because it's worth it. What we're doing now is we're playing Neil Young's Zuma album, Neil Young and Crazy Horse, I should say, the Zuma album, released in November of 1975. And I'm picking up on something on side one that I never noticed in the 50 years that I've known this album. And it's probably because it's the first time I've really sat down to try to think about talking about the songs. Because as I'm describing song by song by song, I'm beginning to see that there's a sort of a chronology here. Don't Cry No Tears leads into Danger Bird, which is the intensity and the brooding part. Then Pardon My Heart, where you let the sadness come over you. Then you get to Looking for a Love, where you accept where you're at and you're beginning to say, I'm going to look for something something different. I'm not going to give up my life and walk away, and you know, I need to find something new. Which, if you're going to do that, what do you do? You know, most people go to bars, right? You, especially in 75, if you're looking to meet somebody, it was always a great place to go to parties, bars, and that sort of thing. And maybe that's exactly what inspired all of side one, because the next track is called Barstool Blues. And Neil said that he wrote the song after he came home from hanging out at a bar. But when he woke up in the morning, he had absolutely no memory of writing it at all. I guess he had a good time at the bar, but he just couldn't remember it. But when he went to play the chords that were recorded, I guess, before he fell asleep, he said it was like so ridiculously high that it was like impossible for him to think that he could have sung the song. It was like three steps higher than it even is on the record. And that's pretty funny, because when you listen to the version on the album, he's singing pretty high. And for Neil, that's saying something. So this is how side one ends. Where do you go? Yeah, when you're looking for love. Barstool Blues. song for song, I think that side one of Zuma is maybe one of the best Neil Young sides ever put together. Just really consistent and diverse at the same time. Flipping the vinyl record over to side two, it's again like the story is still sort of continual. Just you feel like he's got to get a dig in here a little bit. He's gonna like basically twist the knife a little bit. And maybe that's what this song is about. It's simply called Stupid Girl.
Stupid girl, you really got a lot to learn. Start living again, forget about when you were in. You're such a stupid girl. You're such a beautiful fish on the summer sand, looking for the wave you missed when another one is close at hand. You're such a stupid girl. You're such a stupid girl. I saw you in Mercedes Benz, practicing self-defense. You got it pretty good, I guess. I couldn't see your eyes. You're really stupid, girl. You're such a stupid girl. Stupid
such a beautiful fish. Stupid Girl is the name of the song. Next up is a straight up rocker. I guess it just fits in because it does. I'm not going to try to make any relationship between this and the rest of the album. It's just a good rocker called Drive Back.
I have to make you see. is on your mind. Look in my eyes, let me hide you from yourself and all your old friends. Every good thing comes to an end. Drive back.
That is some classic Neil Young-style lead guitar playing right there on Drive Back. Speaking of which, we now get to the track Cortez the Killer, a song that, I don't know if you knew this, but it was banned in Spain during the Franco regime. They wouldn't let them play it. Neil Young himself was pretty dismissive of the song. I mean, he said himself, like, what am I doing writing about the Aztecs in Cortez the Killer? Like, I was there wandering around. I mean, I only read about it in a few books. A lot of it, I just made it up. It was a combination of imagination and some knowledge. Cortez represented, to me, the explorer with two sides, one benevolent and the other utterly ruthless. I mean, look at Columbus. Everybody now knows he was less than great, and he wasn't even there first. It always makes me question all of these other so-called icons. And what's really funny is Neil Young somehow puts himself into the story on the last verse. Neil Young is there with Cortez. So enjoy this. Here's Cortez the Killer. There's a distinct possibility that that song could have been 14 minutes long, but something happened on the board, some circuit broke or something, so they had to fade it out, and they ended up losing a verse in the process. So that brings us to the last track of the album, and it's a song that is, it's almost as though it's on the wrong album. It's called Through My Sails. It's not Crazy Horse at all. In fact, it's Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It's a leftover song from one of the multiple failed attempts by those four guys to create a second Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young studio album. They kept banging their heads and going nowhere with it, and somebody would eventually walk out, usually Neil, saying, I'm sick of this, I can't do it anymore, because of the squabbling or the drugs or the egos. It just was all too much. But Neil did have this song in the cans, so I guess he figured, I'm taking it, I'm going to put it on my album. So this is how it ends, with this Neil Young written track called Through My Sails. Have a great weekend, goodbye, and I hope you can join us Friday at 5, and we'll see you next Wednesday too. See you then.
City lights into paradise. I soar, unable to.
as I'm known.
New things I know.